Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're here. This is The Whole Scoop Radio, where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. We are health and wellness, and it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on the topics of discussion. You already know that. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian practicing for over 30 years and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. So tonight we're talking about, our show is called A Taboo Topic Deserves a Taboo Talk, because we're going to be talking about things that most people don't like to talk about, but we have to talk about. And you know what? We did this last year. We have a fabulous guest tonight. She's been here before. You know her. You liked her a lot. Before I bring her out, I'm going to do the basics of the show, though. You know what you got to do. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. Of course, I'm going to remind you that even though our guests are highly credentialed and they're always full of information, it's important to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. So, call in number again, 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to our Facebook blog page, which is the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. So make sure you catch us over there. You can send us some questions over there. You can send us comments. You can tell us what you like to hear. You can tell us what you don't like to hear and give us some good ideas. We're always reshaping, and we're looking to reshape the show. Not necessarily the show, but do some extra things. So we'll talk about that another time, too. We've got a new web page coming out. We've got some connections. So I can't wait to tell you about all that. We'll look for us on Facebook. That's the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. And then we will be taking questions later on in the program. And at that time, I'm going to call out the last four digits of your telephone number. And when you do that, when if you want to ask a question, remember to press the number one to become part of the queue. Okay, I think we got all that out of the way. I'll do it one more time, 347-855-8894. All right, Jane Kaufman, she's with us tonight. She's fabulous. Those of you that are here because Jane is here, I don't blame you. Everybody should be here because Jane is here. She's just amazing. She's been practicing. She's a practicing physical therapist for more than 30 years. She's a graduate of Ithaca College Physical Therapy Program and earned her master's at the University of Vermont. More recently, she was certified by the Biofeedback Certification Institute of America, the BCIA, in pelvic muscle dysfunction biofeedback, PMDB, becoming one of only six, and that's right, one, two, three, four, five, six healthcare professionals in the Northeast to earn this prestigious certification. So she's one of six. Jane's career has included practice at Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in New York City, Brattleboro Memorial Hospital in Vermont, and at the former Medical Center Hospital of Vermont, where she supervised the Department of Physical Therapy. She has also worked with and managed Burlington area physical therapy practices. Jane's speaking resume includes annual lectures for the University of Vermont's physical therapy program and OBGYN residents, as well as presentations for grand rounds for the family practice and OBGYN departments at Fletcher Ellen Healthcare. She speaks before the Prostate Center support groups and community outreach programs. She's been a guest presenter on Vermont Public Television, Television's Vital Signs and Medical Program, and Across the Fence, a community service program. Jane has been an adjunct associate professor in the University of Vermont's Department of Physical Therapy for more than 20 years. She's served on many professional boards and committees, and her most recent focus is a member of the advisory board for UVM School of Allied Health and Nursing. In recent years, she's focused on men's and women's health issues, which are positively resolved through appropriate physical therapy treatment. Her success in assisting men with prostate dysfunction and women with a variety of incontinence issues has made her an authority and leader in the specialized area of physical therapy in Vermont. You'll find her at the Phoenix Physical Therapy, and that would be phoenixpt.com. So with all that being said, I mean, I'm just excited. Jane, are you with us?
I am. I'm a little
bit. Oh, you're so cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the show, I'm calling it a taboo topic, deserves a taboo talk, only because I wanted to kind of get people's attention and tune in for what we were talking about. So we are talking about incontinence tonight, adult incontinence. We've put out some promos, so just to make you feel more comfortable, Jane, they don't have preconceived notions of their own coming into this, okay? We did do some flyers, we did some statistics, we did some things about you so that people had an idea what the show was on. We just called it that so that they would have to look at it, okay?
Well, so, and I think still in today's society that's a great title for this show, because if I walked into a room, for example, if my husband and I were out for an evening and people would say, oh, so, you know, they talk to us, they say, oh, so what do you do to me? And I'd say, I'm a physical therapist. And my husband would say to them, yeah, she has her own physical therapy practice. She does pelvic muscle dysfunction. And people immediately look at their shoes. So
really?
People don't really want to talk about it. And it's still a hard topic to talk about pee to people. There's a lot more people getting accustomed to this sort of conversation, for sure. And in the last several years, it's certainly got to be more of a popular topic. But still, at the same time, a lot of people are like, oh, my goodness, that is crazy. You know, I don't want to talk about a pee problem. So you have to keep – and you have to be respectful of that, that some people are like, hey, okay, I know someone that has a problem, and I want to help them. And someone else says, you know, I have a problem. I want to get in there and get helped right away. And still others are like, I don't want to talk about this. So it's nice that we can be able to talk about it and share information about it, because all of you who are listening are going to spread this to your mothers, to your grandmothers, to your daughters, to your neighbors, to your friends. And it's information at the right time or the right place that will really make a difference in their lives. There's actually over 25 million adult Americans who suffer from some form of incontinence. And believe it or not, 75 to 80% of those are women. And you know what? It is not a normal part of aging. If you had 3 kids, it doesn't mean you're entitled to leak pee after you've had a baby. So there's ways that you can work through and change all of this. 1 in 4 women over the age of 18 experience episodes of leaking at some point in time. Maybe they laugh a lot. Maybe they're in a hurry and they've held it too long, and then they start to leak in their pants as they race to the toilet. But it is not a normal part of aging, and when people suddenly realize the significance of it, they can get help and they can overcome the problem with some really simple strategies.
At any age, Jane?
Any age. I mean, yes, different phases of our lives, we go through different pieces of this. But, you know, perhaps somebody is in their 20s, 30s, even their early 40s, and they've had a couple of kids, and they realize, let's just use this as an example. They start to leak a little bit after the birth of one of their children. Now that child is, say, a preschooler. And the woman says, all right, I'm going to take you to preschool now, so let's both go to the bathroom. So mom goes to the bathroom, as does the child, and mom gets the child to preschool and says, all right, I'm going to go to the grocery store. I better go pee again. Then before she leaves the grocery store, she says, oh, maybe I better pee again. Then she goes to pick up her child. She's peeing more. And then statistically, we know it takes women about 6 years, of this kind of a problem before they bring it up to the physician. And then it takes the physician, statistically, another 2 years to say, oh, maybe now it's time to get you treatment. By then, the woman is wearing pads. By then, maybe she's peeing more often than is normal, and we'll talk about what's normal in just a minute. And so if women realized earlier on that there was help available and that this was not a normal part of having children, they would get over it. In foreign countries, women get up to 12 visits of physical therapy for management of postpartum incontinence. So,
really?
You know, every country kind of handles it a little bit differently. Now you get to be 40, 50, 60, and we have changes in our bodies that start to happen. So we go through perimenopause, and then we go through menopause. And when that happens, our muscles change. So when we're young, we have this fountain of youth called estrogen in our bodies, and we have toned muscles everywhere. And as we age and we lose that estrogen, our muscles start to get flabby. That's how when you wave your arm, your triceps, the back of your arm starts to wiggle a bit. That's why under your chin it gets a little flabby and you get kind of a turkey neck, or your eyes get a little droopy, or your thighs aren't quite as shaped as they were before, and you think, wow, I go to the gym and I work so hard to keep my muscles in shape, but why is it that it takes so long to get them there? And it's because we don't have that estrogen flowing through our bodies. Well, our pelvic floor muscle, which is at the base of our pelvis, so if you're standing, think about this. You have your spine that goes down your back, and then you have your pelvic bones, you know, and your hips come off of your pelvic bones. Well, between your legs is a muscle group called your pelvic floor. It's the base of your pelvis. That's made of the same kind of muscles as your arms and your legs. It's called skeletal muscle. So if you start to lose your estrogen in your arms and your legs as you go through menopause, you're going to lose it in your pelvic floor. And we describe it as that muscle dropping. It doesn't have the supporting structures anymore, and when it does that, it becomes less pliable, less able to squeeze, less elasticity to it, so it can't grab and hold when it's time to go to the bathroom.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you short there. I just want to ask, so you want me to hold the question?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So is it something, are you saying that the flabbier your arms are, the more likely you are to have urinary incontinence?
No, not at all, but that's an interesting comment. Not at all. I'm just saying that as we age and we lose that estrogen, you can't see this muscle in your pelvic floor, so chances are you're also losing estrogen there. So you might notice that you start to leak. And so,
okay, got
no,
it.
I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. That's a good point.
If I went there in my head, somebody else went in their head too. So
okay, no, that's a good point. So no, it's all just that, you know, as we start to get a little bit older, we're not as toned and fit as we might have been when we were younger. And so this part of our body is also not as toned, and you therefore run a chance of starting to have weakness in that muscle, which would lead to leaking at inappropriate times. And, of course, any leaking would be inappropriate times. So
right.
For a woman, there's a couple of different types of urinary incontinence. There's what we call stress incontinence, and that's not related to stress in your head and anxiety. It's related to pressure from your stomach muscles, your abdominal muscles, pressing against your bladder. So your bladder's in the base of your pelvis, right behind your pubic bone. So if you press there, you might feel it because your bladder kind of sits right there. And so if you tighten your abdominal muscles when you laugh, when you cough, I laugh so hard my stomach hurt, my eye hurt my muscles, okay? That's the kind of thing. You're using your abdominal muscles when that happens or when you're coughing. And if you bend down and pick up a child, or if you pick up a heavy suitcase, you're lifting. And when you're lifting, you're using your abdominal muscles to help stabilize and to help you be able to do the task at hand. Well, think about this. If you're getting a lot of pressure against your bladder and your pelvic floor muscle is weak, where's the pee going to go? It's going to squirt out and it's going to follow the weakest link, which means you're going to pee a little bit in your pants. So stress incontinence typically is the result of this abdominal pressure. We call it intra-abdominal pressure. And it occurs with sneezing, coughing, laughing, running, jumping, lifting. And usually women will leak little drops, but if it happens multiple times, those little drops get to be more and more. So let's say you sneeze five times in a row. Your first time you sneeze, you might be dry. But if you're someone who has those multiple sneezes, by the fifth time, your underwear might be quite wet because you start leaking as you keep doing your sneezes. Mm-hmm. So that's stress incontinence. And then there's what we call urge incontinence. Urge incontinence is, this is an interesting one because maybe you've picked up that child from daycare and you don't even think about going to the bathroom, but then you pull in your driveway and you think, oh, I can't get out of the car. I have to pee really bad. But 5 minutes before that, you didn't have to go. And it's this sudden strong urge to void. And what's happening when you get this sudden strong urge, it's your brain isn't differentiating between a gentle signal to go to the bathroom and a strong signal. It gives you an all or nothing signal and just says, go to the bathroom. So when you pull into your garage and you have that sudden strong urge that you think, I can't get out of the car. I'm going to wet my pants if I try to get in the house. That's what we call key in the door syndrome. And it's the whole concept of coming back to a familiar place or a reminder. Some women walk past their bathroom and get that signal. Other people run water in their kitchen sink, or maybe they go to do the dishes. The sound of running water or the feeling of running water will cause them to leak. So we call that a conditioned response. And that is often an overactive bladder signal. So there are two different types of incontinence. But if you have both types of incontinence, we call that mixed. You have a little bit of both. So these are common terms that are used in the medical field to describe all of this. So about 17% of women over 18 years old have an overactive bladder or that urge incontinence type of symptom. And it's estimated that 12.2 million adults have that urge incontinence. So it's a very common problem.
12.2 million?
12.2 million. And interestingly enough, these statistics are back from several years ago, because this is not like a statistic for heart attacks or cancer or something that's much more prevalent. So these statistics aren't changed as often through the various organizations because it's not life-threatening.
So at what point, though, you know, are there certain conditions that exacerbate this whole thing? You know, and I want to make sure that we include the men into this topic too a little bit because we didn't get to that at all last time.
Okay.
Just a couple of statistics on the prevalence for men, but we don't need to go into a whole lot of that right this second because I want to kind of get to this this other area of like, are there specific conditions, and if somebody is diagnosed with a particular condition that the incontinence may be secondary to, then are there exercises, is there treatment to for that kind of situation, or does it have to be primary?
Yeah, no. Can we take a minute? Let's continue on that, and then I'll jump into the men for a second, then we can go back to women.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's an important
thing. However you're comfortable, that's great.
Okay, because that's an important thing. Women who are overweight have more pressure on their bladder. There's a statistic that says if you lose 5% of your body weight, that you will reduce the incidence of incontinence. So for people who are overweight, that's certainly something to look at. But think of those women. Doctor says, okay, you're a little overweight, you need to exercise. And the woman thinks, well, why do I want to exercise? I pee in my pants. I am not going to be very comfortable going to exercise. So you get into a vicious cycle with that.
Well, and I'm going to talk to you in a minute. I'm going to add something to that as a dietitian, because women that are over a particular age, it's not that easy just to lose weight by cutting calories or whatever. There are so many multiple factors, and it's like peeling an onion. So,
yep.
You know, that the whole incontinence thing could be tertiary to the other things that are going on. And so, yeah, that in itself. So if anybody's listening going, hey, but that, you know, I know and that's another reason for me to lose weight, stop beating yourself up, because there's a lot of different reasons for it, okay? So.
Right. And I love that you use the term peeling back an onion, because I use that in the office every single day. That's like one of my favorite terms, because it all just leads to finding out more information. There are, if you're a huge exerciser and your leg muscles are tight and maybe you're very fit, sometimes that extra tension in those surrounding muscles, so your inner thighs, your outer thighs, your the front of your thighs, the back of your thighs, your abdominal muscles, all that tension in those surrounding muscles can create what we call an overflow tension to your pelvic floor, and then sometimes you'll have more leaking associated with that. I'm not saying that everybody does by any means, but there are many women who do Pilates or do CrossFit who come in and they leak because they're in such top shape, but they're tightening their pelvic floor all the time. So we have to take them down a different path, and we have to work to teach them to relax that pelvic floor muscle. But there are things that can add to it. The weight, what we drink, we should be drinking 6 to 8 cups of clear fluids a day, and we should void pee 6 to 8 times a day. So if you're listening, one day just add up, like maybe a typical day, maybe it's a Saturday or Sunday, or maybe it's a day at work, add up how many times do you go to the bathroom? Do you get up at night? Well, if you're in your let's just say 50s and lower, you really shouldn't have to get up at all at night to go to the bathroom. Maybe 50s to 60s to 70s, get up once at night. More than that, that's something to say, why am I getting up so often? Oh, well, maybe somebody's drinking 3 cups of tea before they go to bed. Well, that fluid goes in and wants to come out at night. So think about how much fluid you're drinking. Sometimes at work, when you get busy, it's easy to forget to drink fluids. And then at 5 o'clock, you're like, oh, look at this. My water bottle's still on my desk, and I haven't touched it. And then you guzzle that down, and you get home, and you drink another one, and then you drink one more before you go to bed. And you get up several times at night. Well, because you put all your fluids at the end of the day. So you try to spread them out throughout the day. And again, 6 to 8 cups of clear fluid is great, and 6 to 8 voids a day in a 24-hour period is great. Just don't put all those pees at night. Caffeine is going to add to what we call bladder irritation. So when I say clear fluids, I really mean things like water. Yeah, you could have a cup of juice. I don't mind that. You could have a cup of coffee, 1 cup or a cup of tea. But if you tell me you've had 4 cups of coffee and 1 cup of water and you don't understand why you're peeing every 20 minutes, think of what you just took in. The coffee has a ton of caffeine. So some people will also say, I drink 1 cup of coffee in the morning and I'm peeing every 20 minutes afterwards. Here's a tip to try and see if it doesn't help you. When you get up in the morning, have like maybe 1/2 a cup of water, then have your coffee. So first thing we do in the morning is we empty our bladder. Second thing we do in the morning is we go make coffee, and we drink that. So that coffee drips into the caffeine, and the irritation drips into an empty bladder. If you had 1/2 a cup of water first, it would dilute the effect of the coffee, and you might not have to pee so often. Doesn't work for everyone, but it's always worth a try if you love that coffee first thing in the morning. So there are things.
That's great too.
Yeah, there are things that you can do to limit. You know, we all have our little triggers that we like. Maybe someone says, I love my soda, but it drives me crazy. So if it's a caffeinated or a diet soda, take a look at switching. Try a seltzer instead. Try maybe a flavored water to still give you some kind of satisfaction that it's not straight water. Or add a slice of lemon, or I don't know what you tell them, Carol, but maybe like throw in some grapes or a slice of orange or cucumbers or something into that water if you like to have just a little bit of flavor to it. So those are things to consider. But if for people, anybody, and this goes for men or women, but if you have a little pee problem where maybe you're not holding your pee well and you leak in your pants, the first thing we think is, I'm not having anything to drink. I don't dare have any water. How can I drink water? I pee in my pants. I can't have any more fluid. Our own bodies are irritated by the concentrated urine we create when we don't drink fluids.
Say that again.
Our bodies become irritated by the concentrated urine when we don't drink fluids. So if you're someone who says, I'm not drinking any water today because I pee in my pants, that makes concentrated urine. So when you do pee, it's thick and it's dark and it's smelly. And that is more of an irritant to your bladder because your bladder is kind of fussy. It only wants like light-colored urine and it only wants to be diluted and it's only happy that way. If you have concentrated urine, you pee more and you leak more. So you're creating more of a problem.
So you will pee more?
You will pee more. You will leak more. So it's counterintuitive.
So if you don't get the proper amount of fluid in a day,
you have more of a problem.
You're going to have more of a problem maybe during the day or at night or both?
Both. And guess what? If you leak, it becomes stinkier, and that's what you're trying to avoid. So it doesn't mean go have 10 cups of water.
Well, reason to tell people to have fluids. Thank you.
Exactly. Now you have a new reason. Exactly.
Thank you.
Women are pretty good about it. It's the men that are not so good about it. And it's very interesting when you start to think about men, because I just rattled off all these statistics for you. For women, urinary incontinence is twice as common in women as in men. Pregnancy, childbirth, and menopause are major reasons of the increased prevalence of incontinence in women in the ages between 18 and 44. So you kind of get to that. I mean, think about it, 18-year-olds to 44, that's that young crowd. Approximately 24% of women experience some form of incontinence, and women over 60, 23% deal with incontinence. Then we go look at statistics for men. There's very little out there for men. It's very fascinating. Most of the statistics for men are associated with men who have had prostate surgery. So as men age, it's not uncommon for them to find out. A man over, I think it's age 50, have a PSA test. That's the to check on the prostate to see what is happening inside the prostate and is there the development of cancer cells. And as that test climbs, then doctors initially will watch it and look at it, and then as it rises, they may suggest that a gentleman goes in for a biopsy, and then they test it to see is there cancer in this prostate. Well, the prostate is located below the bladder. So if we look in our pelvis, let's just switch to women for a second, then I'm going to go back to men. But we have a bladder, and at the base of the bladder is like a balloon. And so picture a balloon blown up. That's the bladder. And then the stem of the balloon is our urethra. And we have our urethra that's quite small. It's, you know, maybe an inch or 2 inches at the most. And in men, they have the bladder, and then they have the urethra, which obviously is longer. But they have this walnut-sized gland between the bladder itself, and it's attached to the urethra. And at the top of it, it's attached to the bladder, the urethra, and there's an internal funnel-shaped sphincter, which is a valve that functions like our kitchen sink drain. You twist it shut, and then the sink fills. And you open it, you twist it the other way, and it opens and the sink drains. And how many of us have tubs or kitchen sinks where you twist the valve and it leaks?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that happens to men. But often when men go and have their prostate removed because they have cancer, they traumatize that valve, and the valve takes a while before it starts working again. So men may develop incontinence, and the statistics associated with male incontinence is all over the place. So there isn't a ton of information that's out there, and that's what's frustrating to providers, because how many men actually get incontinence? Well, it varies widely in the literature. 5 to 87%. 5% to 87%.
5 to 87%?
Yes. It's a huge variation.
You think maybe some of it is because men don't like to say? They won't tell anyone?
I suspect they're like, all right, I'm not going to talk about it. Or they say, oh, well, I just had my prostate removed, so of course I'm going to leak. They don't have to leak either because guess what? They have a muscle just like we do. Mm-hmm. The inner stuff is a little bit different with that valve, but they still have a muscle. So in a man, they have the bladder, they have that internal funnel, and we all have a funnel in our kitchen someplace, so think about what that looks like. The wide part of the funnel sits up in their bladder, and the skinny part of the funnel, you know, the little stem of it, is down in the urethra. And it varies in size in every man. So when that area is traumatized with a prostate surgery, it will take a while for that funnel, if you will, to come back to life. So that is the first line of continence in a man. They have that sphincter. We don't have it as women. Our bladder is kind of angled a little bit differently, so we don't have that funnel. So in a man, that's the first line of continence. That's the first string out there on the football field. Second string is sitting on the bench, but the second string is the prostate encroaching. This is before the surgery. The prostate encroaches a little bit around the urethra. So some men have hypertrophy of this prostate gland. So it may take them forever to pee. So as a wife, maybe you're sitting in the car going, where is he? He said he would be out in a minute. He's still in the bathroom, because it might take him a while to pee. Or he might get up 3 or 4 times at night to pee because he can't get it all out during the day, so it comes out at night. So men will also talk about their stream being really slow or weak or kind of dribble, 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 dribble because they have this encroachment on the urethra. So it acts like another form of continence in a way. The third line sits on the bench all the time. It is the third string quarterback. It is the pelvic floor muscle until a gentleman has his prostate removed if he needs to. Then the first string is out of commission, second string isn't there anymore, and third string all of a sudden says, whoa, I got a job to do, and I'm not really sure how to do it. So a man has to learn how to make that muscle function. And he does the same exercises that we do as women. It's exactly the same exercise. What's the first thing men do? Well, I'm not going to have anything to drink because I'm afraid I'm going to leak. So they create more of a problem, and they get wetter. Once you get them to start realizing, no, they have to have fluids, then they're like, oh, okay, now I kind of get that. Okay, I need to keep my pee clear and not so dark yellow. If it comes out dark, then that's telling you you're not hydrated enough. If you feel thirsty, you're not hydrated. If your lips are cracked, you know all the signs, then they're not hydrated enough. And men also are funny.
I mean, we could spend time talking about that all night because, you know, then you tax the kidney, which then ultimately taxes the bladder, which is a vicious cycle, which causes ultimate other organ issues and blah, 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 blah. So if you maintain that, it's a problem. It's a real problem.
Right. So we just say, again, to men, drink 6 to 8 cups of clear fluids a day. And spread it out throughout the day. And make sure, you know, don't drink a lot of V8 juice. If you're going to drink beers, my male patients have said, tell the men if they like to drink their beers, put a pad on. And actually they should just pour the beer in the pad because then they can skip the middleman because they will leak. And I think it has to do with the hops of the beer or something with the actual beer itself. But I say to men, if you want to go out and have a beer with your buddies, just put a pad on, or know you're going to have to pee a little more often, but don't deny yourself that experience of hanging out with the guys.
Wow.
So the men who use pads, so maybe as women we say, oh, okay, I've had 4 kids, so I guess it's probably normal that I leak, so I'm just going to wear a pad. My friends wear pads. I remember my mother did. Yeah. You don't want them to, but maybe they do.
Right.
For a man, use of a pad significantly affects his quality of life, much more than using a pad for a woman would do. And I think it may be related just to us, just, you know, having periods and everything else.
So Jane, let me do this. Let me you have to take a small break here, let everybody know what you're listening to, and I'm just going to remind everybody for a second what we're doing. Give me a second.
Yep.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
So I want to make sure that everybody has the phone number, 347-855-8894. If you want to ask a question, go ahead and press the number 1. We're going to be taking questions in just a couple minutes here. So before we take the questions, though, Jane, we're talking with Jane Kaufman. She is a physical therapist in Vermont. She is an absolute expert on this topic, and I could just listen to her all night because I learn so much from you every time that we talk.
You're
so
sweet
thank
to say that. Thank you. Thank you.
And your website is PhoenixPT.
A lot of people have trouble spelling Phoenix, so it's PhoenixPhoenixPT.com. PhoenixPT.com. And it's the phoenix, not the city. It's not related to the city, but it means rising from the ashes.
Cool. Very cool. So you'll find her there. And please, if you want to blog in your questions, you can do that on our Facebook page, The Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. We're taking questions there. There's, again, a whole lot of information. So what I want to do is I want to kind of take the next couple of minutes, tell people what they can do. Let's go back to women. Let's tell women what they can do, because we still didn't get into the are there specific diagnoses that might be, you know, make this a secondary or tertiary problem, or you know, maybe we could just kind of run through those real fast, like what kinds of situations might people be experiencing. We talked about men and prostate cancer, and that is pretty much the number one, and they have a smaller prevalence of this, correct?
Right.
So maybe if we go back to women and go ahead.
All right, so women, it could be aging, so lack of estrogen, childbirth, the stretching of the muscles. Perhaps it is being overweight. That could play a role. Maybe being super, super fit, and so you have a tense muscle, and that's a little bit different. Women who are teachers, nurses, any kind of a profession where you don't get time to go to the bathroom during the day, and you might notice you start to leak because you can never get there at an appropriate time. So I would say maybe occupation in some degree will affect how this muscle behaves and when you get to go to the bathroom. I think that's important to consider as well. Sometimes, without getting into this whole other topic, but women who have what we call a pelvic organ prolapse, so sometimes with labor and delivery, and again with the change in menopause and the estrogen levels, women may experience a dropping of their organs, and they may feel what's similar to, and we sometimes call it a herniation, but it presses against the vaginal walls, and you may feel a bulge from an internal organ, and that's a whole other topic in and of itself, but that can be a problem. Straining, coughing, coughing all the time with smoking, that can lead to a problem. Improper fluid intake may lead to a problem. Those are all really common things. Marathon runners, people who like to run, that jouncing, bouncing, constant pressure may cause some incontinence as well. In some people, if they have diabetes, they may have a problem. Maybe if they have other neurological diseases, they may have a problem. There's always all sorts of things we can do with other conditions. Someone who has cerebral palsy, there's all sorts of other things that we can work on to help improve someone's situation.
What about cancers? Or what about somebody that's gone through chemo? What about somebody that maybe has had radiation, not necessarily in that area of the body, but I guess going for the overall depression of the body and its functions. And
that's really that's a really great that you just mentioned that, because I have forgotten that, but recently I've had several women who have come in who, if you have chemotherapy, even if it's for breast cancer or another kind of cancer, the chemo, the toxic chemicals, sometimes will provide such irritation to the lining of the bladder and the urethra that their pee will burn, and then they have to pee all the time. So we get this urgency frequency, and they may leak with that process, and that's a group. The other group is people who've had radiation, and you have to drink a ton of fluids to flush your system after that, and they, too, will have a problem. You don't have to have the radiation to that private part of your body. You don't have to have the chemo because of a problem in that part of your body. It's more of the systemic effect, and it's not uncommon for us to have to see women with these issues. You're absolutely right. That's a perfect example of another situation. And if you've gotten over your chemo or your radiation and you want to get your life back and you want to start exercising and you're starting to feel better, but you have this maybe leaky bladder or you're peeing every 15 minutes, that's reason to say my quality of life is affected from this component now. And I recently had a woman in the office, and that was the case. She said, I've gotten through all this other horrific stuff, but I pee all the time. I can't go to the mall with my grandchildren. I can't do other things because I'm always peeing. And she came in and we got her better, and that was a great thing, and she just felt tremendous afterwards. So you're absolutely right. That can be a piece as well. Good call.
Okay.
Well.
So what other kinds of things? I mean, I guess I'm just looking at it from if I step back and I just look at people, you know, if I'm not walking well, if I'm not walking well, would that have something to do with me being able to empty my bladder? I mean, is that
if
a
you're
strange...
not walking well because you need a knee replacement, so you're hobbling around. If you're not walking well because you just had a knee replacement, or you have a vestibular problem where maybe your balance is off, you're more likely to fall on the way to the toilet. So that puts you at a far greater risk. And when that's the case, that's a concern to everyone medically, because if you fall on the way to the bathroom, there are statistics, I can't quite quote all of them, but if you fall, you're likely to break what we call a long bone. A long bone can be your femur, which your hip is attached to, or your shoulder, and that could put you in the hospital and or in a nursing home, depending on your age and other factors, other comorbidities, other reasons why maybe this happened. So if your balance is off, if you struggle to get to the toilet, some of our orthopedic surgeons locally will say to patients, you need to go to Phoenix PT first. Get your bladder under control before I replace your knee, because I don't want you racing to the toilet after your knee replacement and risk having you fall. So those are really critical pieces that play a role. Somebody walks with a cane, they're going to potentially fall on the way to the bathroom, because what do? We hurry. Maybe we can't see well at night. Maybe we're up too many times at night and at risk for falling.
I guess, you know, those are great points, and I guess I was going for more like if I'm not able to walk well, and it would stand to reason that my muscular structure is not necessarily up to par, so am I voiding, am I able to empty my bladder the way that it needs to be emptied, or am I not possibly emptying fully, so I have to constantly pee?
That comes up. I was kind of avoiding that because it's a whole other area of. But if somebody has difficulty walking, maybe when they go to walk, their right leg crosses in front of their left leg, their left leg crosses in front of their right leg. They have so much tone in their legs from a medical condition such as cerebral palsy, or maybe they've had a stroke, or they have MS, multiple sclerosis, or who knows, whatever. chances are they have a ton of tone, a ton of extra tension in that pelvic floor, and then they can't pee completely. And how we treat that is different because we teach them how to relax that muscle, not strengthen that muscle. You don't want to strengthen
the
muscle.
Okay, so that's kind of like the athlete. You have to teach them.
Yeah. Exactly. So when a woman has a problem, and this goes for men too right now, but if you are leaking and you have a problem getting to the toilet in time, for example, or you pee more than those 6 or 8 times a day, here's some things that you can do. Here are some practical take-home tips. If you pee every half an hour, for example, during the day, distract yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Say state capitals alphabetically. I can't do that. Say states alphabetically. That's even hard. Add a bunch of complicated numbers together in your head. Recite all the phone numbers that you had as a child. Make your brain think of something else, because the reflex that tells you to go to the bathroom is primitive. If you put a higher functioning process into your brain, that takes over. So if you get your brain thinking of something else, you can distract yourself. I used to know a woman who would sing the French national anthem in French. That's how she
Seriously?
Would remember. Yep. And she was like, okay.
And that
I can
would distract
that.
Her from having to go to the bathroom.
Correct. Some people will recite nursery rhymes. Other people will sing Christmas carols. Whatever it is,
I have a quick fix. I mean, the quick fix is really simple. Just become a healthcare professional and you won't make it to the bathroom. You won't have an opportunity to go to the bathroom
well,
very much.
Well, not a chance to go, right. Or a teacher. Teachers the same way.
Right.
They don't get a chance to go. But so if you go all the time, you can distract yourself to suppress the urge. Now, it's not going to last you all day. It's not going to get you to go longer, but it might get you in the house. It might get you to put your grocery bag down on the counter and then gracefully walk to the toilet without trying to unzip your pants in the process as you're racing down the hall. So
right.
it buys
okay,
you a little
I'm
bit
of stop you there for a second. I just want to remind everybody, if you want to ask a question, press the number 1. If you are pressing 1, it's not coming through on the board. Let me know that on the Facebook page, or get your questions on the Facebook page for us. But you know, press the number 1. Let's see if we can get, because sometimes with this particular program, I don't know why, but we have had issues in the past where people have pressed the number 1 and they didn't get through and it didn't come up. So I'm just reminding everybody. Okay, sorry, Jane, I had to do that.
Okay, that's okay. The next thing I want to say before we do anything else is I want to teach you how to make that muscle function. I think this is really important. So the first thing you do when you think, how do I squeeze this muscle? How do I tighten this muscle? Think about this. Think about standing in a crowded elevator next to the person you admire most in your life. Could be a famous person, could be your next door neighbor, doesn't matter, could be a family member. But you have eaten a massive plate of beans and you have to pass gas really badly and you're afraid you're going to do it on the elevator. What are you going to do? You're going to tighten that muscle and you're going to squeeze the back of the muscle. I know the pee problems in the front of the muscle. But if you squeeze the back of the muscle, you get the whole muscle. Think if you had a tampon in. You don't want it to fall out. You want to squeeze and hold that tampon in. That's another way to look at it. But if you only think, okay, I'm going to sit. This is not what you're ever to do. Don't sit on the toilet and say, I'm going to stop and start my flow of pee. A lot of doctors who are less aware of this kind of a treatment or a management technique will say, try that. Don't do that, please, because if you try to stop your pee, it'll stop, and then you'll have to go back 15 minutes later, or you'll get an infection because you didn't get all the pee out. So focus on the back of the muscle and think, oh, I don't want to pass gas, or you're standing in front of a crowd of people, oh, I really don't want to make this toot come out, and so you squeeze that muscle, okay? Squeeze it, and then let it go. Squeeze it for a second, release it for 2. Squeeze it for a second, release it for 2. You can do that 10 times a day and repeat it up to 6 times a day. You wouldn't even have to do that often in the beginning. Squeeze it for 10 times. Squeeze it, release it. Squeeze it, release it. You could do it 20 times in a row, but not more than that. I had a friend once whose doctor said, do it 100 times every time you sneeze. Well, if you do more than 20, you tire your muscle. That doesn't help you. So squeeze it, release it. And then the other thing, what?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, finish that. Go ahead.
All right. The other thing you want to do is squeeze it and hold it. See if you can hold it for a count of 10 and then let it go. When you squeeze it, it moves in the direction toward your head. When you let it go, it moves in the direction toward your feet. If you squeeze it, it just tightens a little bit. It only moves about a half an inch, so we're not talking it goes very far. But when you squeeze it, you feel things tighten down there. And when you release it, you feel things let go. You always have to rest your muscle twice as long as you hold your muscle. Otherwise, you create too much tension. So squeeze it, let it go. Squeeze it, let it go.
And that'll work for anybody, for anything that we've talked about, right?
And if it doesn't, yes, it should work. If it doesn't work, it means you already have a tight muscle, and therefore you have to go down another road at another time. So if you say, I do that all the time, it does nothing for me, it's not for you. It means you already have a tight muscle. But since you can't see it, you don't know that it's tight.
Okay. So that brings me to my next question. How many MDs know to refer to somebody like you?
Well, that's a tough question because I live in a community with maybe 100,000, 120,000 people. And I have been here for a long time, so I've trained all my doctors. And I'm doing, for example, a pediatric grand rounds for the entire state. It's going to be broadcast all over the state. I'm doing that in 2 weeks. I've trained these doctors. They know when in doubt, send the patients over to Phoenix PT. But I'm really unusual. The rest of the country isn't like that. So I have the luxury of the docs calling me. I had a phone call today from a doctor. Hey, I think this patient could benefit from you. What do you think? I mean, they just call me and they ask, or they send in these referrals, and we get a ton of referrals and a ton of patients because they know we exist, but that's been my focus. Typically, I'm not sure, depending on where you go to medical school, how much knowledge physicians get on the pelvic floor muscle as a muscle that functions as a skeletal muscle. It's kind of like, Carol, how many doctors actually get trained in nutrition?
Well, I mean, I can tell you right now, they don't.
Right.
Unless they individually choose to do it on their own.
And I think this may apply the same way. I think it may be similar.
Well, I bring it up because we have people, you know, from different areas listening.
Right.
And
right.
if they're hearing this and they're going, but how do I bring this up to my doctor? And there is a question on the blog that actually says that. I have stress incontinence, and I'm 58 years old. I've been told because I've had 3 pregnancies, that's why this is happening. I don't know that I buy that. This lady lives in Kentucky. She lives in Lexington, outside of Lexington. She said the university is not far, but she says, I don't know what to expect, what to ask, and how to approach it.
Okay. So I would say the first thing you do is you see your physician and you say, here's my problem. I want a referral. The doctor may say, and I've heard this, oh, you're just getting older. Oh, you've had several kids. Just get used to it. Well, you have to say to them, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to get used to it. I know there's treatment. You could also go to, and this is www.bcia.org. It's a biofeedback certification alliance. And if you go onto the top of the page and you look at the home page, it says find a provider. Click that on and go down and type in your state, your zip code, how far away you're willing to travel. I think you might not even have to do that. And you may find a provider in your area. The initials you're looking for, because there are different types of biofeedback. So the initials you're looking for are B, C, B, hyphen, P, M, D. B, C, B,
hyphen,
P.
Let's do that again. Is it Boy, Charlie, Boy?
Okay. Hyphen, Peter, Matthew, David.
Okay, so it's B, C, B, hyphen,
yep.
P, M, D. Okay, and
correct.
That stands for what?
Pelvic muscle dysfunction biofeedback certification. So
what?
I know, I've probably trained half the people that have that, but the whole thing I know is that they have the knowledge and the expertise to help you. Many of your insurance plans say you have to have a physician referral, so you have to talk to your doctor. But I hear it, that people all over the country, some doctors are like, nope, doesn't work, but it depends on who's providing the care. Or they'll say, here, take this medicine. So
yeah.
You kind of have to be your own advocate, and I think we have to do that in all sorts of aspects of healthcare. But if you check out this website, you may find, I want to say there's somebody in the Lexington, Kentucky area that's certified. That might be a great place to start and contact them and say, what do you want me to do? What do I need to do based on the insurance plan I have in this state? What do I need to do?
Right. And I'm so grateful for that question, especially coming out of Lexington.
That was perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And by the way, that's I went to school at UK, so I know that area pretty well. And I just love it. So I'm so glad people are listening. It's great. So listen, Jane, what I want to know though, you made a really strong point, but I'm just going to talk I'm going to take a second and just be a practitioner for a second, because most physicians, not most, but some physicians, and some in smaller areas especially, don't want to hear from their patients that they know what's wrong with them, you know?
I know, yeah.
So it's a touchy kind of situation where
and
when
they get
you're
mad.
When you're approaching a physician, you know what's wrong with you, or you know what you want your doctor to know about you. I think that's a better way of saying it, right?
Yeah.
Then you kind of have to present it. It's an old adage in healthcare. Whenever you want a doctor to do something that you know they need to do, you have to make it their decision.
Yeah.
So. What would be a good approach for somebody to get their doctor to make him or her think that it was their decision to get him to you?
This is probably the toughest question I've ever had to answer.
Sorry.
Okay. I know. So, all right, I would say, Dr. Jones, you know, every time I sneeze or cough, and I've just had this horrible sinus infection and I feel miserable, but I'm peeing in my pants all the time. Is there anything I can do? I don't want to take medicine, but I've heard about these exercises that have been around a long time called Kegel exercises, based on this Dr. Kegel back in the 1940s. Would doing those exercises be of any benefit to me? Do you think it's worth my time to try to do that? I mean, I don't like this leaking in my pants. Is there anything I can do to help me, and is there anyone who can teach me how to do those exercises correctly? Because I don't know how to do them. Can you help me? Can you give me some advice? I don't know. Maybe something
and,
like that.
And you know what? The other thing to do with that is I found this person, and she's right down the road, and you know, I called them and they said it's great, but I wanted to talk to you and I wanted to get your opinion on it, because they sound really good and it would really be nice if I could learn how to use those exercises a little bit. So what do you think? Just turned it around to your doctor, and your doctor now is like, oh yeah, that's a good idea, and now all of a sudden it's his or her idea.
If it's their idea, and we you know, send them notes, and we say to the patient, if you're really happy with the care you got here, go tell your doctor how happy you are and thank the doctor for referring you here. So we do it that way. So kind of a back doorway.
Yeah,
and then the doctor kind of puffs up and goes, oh, yes, I did a great job. I referred you to this other place. And then they feel really good about what they did. And that's exactly right. But I come from a different environment. Up here, they know me. They've heard of me. We have over 350 physicians that refer to our practice. And we're always the go-to because I've trained them over the years. But
right.
It took a long time to train them.
Yeah, right. It did. I'm sure it did. Well, congratulations on that.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think you just made a really, really good point, as you always do, is that, you know, this is something, if you can go to them and make it look like it was their idea, where can you send me? What can I do? Tell me what to do, because, and then thank the doctor. Thank you so much for sending me there. I'm so thrilled that you did that. And then they
right.
will all be all excited about it. Yeah.
That's right. And it's their idea.
Yeah,
and on that note, we are out of time. Again, Jane, this is like really amazing.
Thank you. Thank you,
you know?
For inviting me. Thank you. I appreciate it very much. I don't know who's listening, but thank you all for taking the time and listening. And if I can help one person learn to control this muscle and not leak, hey, I will be the happiest camper on the face of the earth. So
thank you all. Gave out a plethora of information, websites, exercises. I think you put people's minds at ease a little bit just for knowing that it's more common than they think.
Yep.
You know, it's really nice. So thank you for that.
You're most welcome. And people can email me if they need to at my website. If they go into the website, there's a link that they can email me.
Perfect. Well, and we are going to have you back. You and I are going to talk about that, about when to have you back.
Okay.
And we'll do something. The next time that you come back, we'll probably let's do something. Maybe we'll take some case studies or something and get people to talk about their case studies.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
All right. That
sounds
great.
Like a plan. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Jane.
So much.
Give me a second here.
All right.
Everybody, just know that our next show is going to be on the 23rd at 7 p.m., and we are going to be talking about the opioid epidemic. So we've got Dr. Raj Hulin coming on, and he is a Ph.D. in neurology. So we're going to talk about the opioid stuff, and we're going to learn a lot about all that. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it'll be great. And we will go from there. And on that note, I'm going to say see you on the 23rd. Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
We're going to do the – hey, everybody.